And the Oscar goes to, by a nose, Nicole Kidman.
Hello, Anna.
Hello, Sam.
I want a mega cut of all the rounds of us introducing ourselves to each other on this, because this is not the first time we've tried this, or even the fourth or fifth.
Nope, but, it is not.
I feel a special energy on this one.
Mm-hmm.
Anna Swanson, welcome to the Kid Manifesto.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Happy Oscar nominations day. You'll feel kind of like I'm rifling through this. I feel like since we've done this a couple of times, but I still mean it. Happy Oscar nominations day.
Thank you. Happy Oscar noms to you too.
I do want you to have a section where you can talk about Brad Pitt's nomination freely on the record. So I must ask, how are you feeling? Did you have to lie down? Who did you have to pay in the Oscar voting pool to make sure it happened?
Oh, I bribed so many people. I couldn't even begin to name them all here, but I am thrilled. I am having a good day. As I've told you multiple times now on our other recordings that didn't record, you know, like, I will complain about the Oscars because it's my favorite thing to do, but truly I would sell everyone out for Brad Pitt to win. I don't care what else happens. Like, if I get this, I am one track mind, Brad Pitt acting win, and I will be content. So
like, Joker could sweep with every, because there's no conflict there. There's not like a best supporting actor nomination.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Great. You know? Jojo Rabbit, best picture.
I won't be pleased, but I'll take it if Brad wins.
If you had to say one nice thing about Jojo Rabbit, what would you say?
Thomasin McKenzie, great, love her.
Yeah, it's kind of an unimpeachable performance, right?
It really is. Like, she's fantastic. Can't wait to see her again in Kelly Gang 2020.
Oh yeah, she's in that. You love that movie.
Oh, I do.
I was cruising through Apple Music's new soundtracks, and I saw that one of the first hits was True History of Kelly Gang, and I was like, it's their year. It's the gang's year in 2020.
It is. KG.
Yeah, that's the movie with, wait, is it the same twink that's in 1917? I keep mixing my twinks up.
Yes, George MacKay.
Okay. Between him and Harris Dickinson, I have actual, like, face blindness for.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
That's the like, Beach Rats and Maleficent 2 guy.
Oh, okay.
You might just never have noticed, because you might have just thought, oh, that's George MacKay.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, okay, he was in 1917, or he was in Dunkirk, one of the two.
Oh, yeah, he was, I think, too tall to be in Dunkirk. Those were all very small twinks.
That's true, yeah.
Those things were small.
Harry Styles is, like, 6 feet, right?
I have no idea. I'm the wrong person to ask that.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't know. What else do we even say about the Oscars? But like, in my mind, I was like, oh, we couldn't record this yesterday. It's going to be so nice. It's going to be Oscar nominations. Now that they're here, I'm just like, popes. There's two of them.
Yeah. I mean, you've already said this, but it's just like, it's mostly just that they're boring.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Joker, like, Todd Phillips and, like, the Popes and, you know, whatever.
Isn't it crazy that a movie that, like, proclaims to be so radical as Joker, like, getting 11 nominations is, like, the boringest thing that could ever happen?
Truly, it is. And it's, like, such a dull film. Like, everyone is sort of, like, acting like it's this sort of, like, dangerous, radical film. And it's more just stupid to me. I don't think it can say anything dangerous, because I don't think it's smart enough to say anything at all. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it's so mediocre. I'm like, there's nothing here. There's nothing here that's, like, truly terrible, and there's nothing here that's great.
Yeah. Can I say something that, like, might get me canceled in certain parts of the internet about Joker?
Yes, do it.
I don't hate the score.
Yeah. I, like, don't really remember it super
it's
well. Like, I
loud.
Kind of. Yeah.
I just
feel
like.
That's also what the movie is.
Yeah. I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like it at least is trying to do something. And I'm also, like, not gonna shake my fist at, like, a female composer getting nominated in 2020.
Yeah.
But, like, if that was the winner secretly, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
Since we can't get the beautiful James Newton Howard score for A Hidden Life nominated, then I'll have to settle for what I can get.
Yeah, that's true.
Remember a hidden life? Remember when the life, our lives were hidden and now they're out in the open?
Ugh. The lives are out and so are the knives.
The lives are out. The knives are out. A hidden life has, I think we might have talked about this, the holy trinity of, like, super hot Eastern European actors.
Ooh, yes.
Which is, like...
Where it's, like... Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I wanted them to kiss the entire time. It's, like, Franz Rogatsky, Augustiel and Matteo Schoenaerts, who was on my best actor ballot until, like, 2 weeks ago, sadly. That Mustang, baby.
Yeah. No. Love it. No, yeah, they're great. I love A Hidden Life. I'm really, like, pleased with it. I'm excited to see it again. I'm going to have to rewatch it.
I want my life to be hidden again. I need to see it again, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I love that. That was, like, I think we must have talked about this, but that was, like, the movie that I saw. It was the second last movie of TIFF, and it was just so nice to see it just after, like, all of these films that had just sort of, like, weighed on me, where I was like, oh, okay, I'm watching something truly spectacular now.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I saw it mid-festival. Also, I may be reinventing history. This was at least my last movie, but did we see Emma together after? Okay, and...
Yes, that was our last... Oh, wait, no, I lied. A Hidden Life was my third last. Jojo Rabbit was my second last. Emma was my very last movie, because we saw that, like, 9 p.m.
Yeah, they were, like, everything. Everyone was so over it, including us.
Yeah. But we went on all
Yeah, no, that's a wonderful movie that will never see the light of day again. Mm-hmm. Anyone gets a chance to see Pablo Larraín's Emma or Emma, it's really good and weird and...
Yeah.
I don't know. I really miss that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And, like, I think such a good film to see on the big screen, just, like, the dance sequences and see it with an audience.
You know, my second favorite dance sequences of the year after Climax.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, my third favorite after Climax, and then number one is Joker dancing on the stairs.
Oh, God.
If this podcast never gets aired, that'll be what the Joker wanted all along.
Yes,
that's he loves mischief, plan. And that would be the most mischievous thing.
Yeah, I was talking to my roommate today about how, like, the true just, like, pinnacle of this year would be if Joker lost and all of the, like, Joker bros leaked the Oscar noms, like they hacked the system and leaked the voters.
Oh, like the database. Like the PricewaterhouseCooper, like, voter registrar.
Yeah, like they exposed everyone who didn't vote for Joker, and we got to see, like, all of the votes. I think that would be hilarious, like a Sony hack, but for the Academy.
Isn't it crazy that, like, when Joaquin Phoenix wins Best Actor, the clip they're going to play is the scene where he says, like, I'm a mentally ill loner that, like, blah, blah, like, where it basically, like, explains its flawed thesis out loud.
Oh, God.
And we're all just going to have to...
All I have are negative thoughts.
We're all just going to have to sit... Like, Octavia Spencer is going to be sitting in the audience, and, like, they're going to cut to her, and she's going to have to clap. Sorry, she won't be in the audience. She'll be backstage, because, as I've mentioned off mic, she'll be hosting the Academy Awards this year as Ma.
As Ma, yes, of course.
And then every time Joker wins, she's going to say, y'all mad at me?
Oh, I wish. That would make for a great ceremony.
Who else do you think from the Oscars, like, in character, would be a good contender to host?
Ooh, that's good. I'm trying to think of
good ones. Moon Gwang, the first housekeeper from Parasite, would be a good choice.
Oh, yes.
Or the dogs from Parasite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Laura Dern in Marriage Story, where it would just be her monologuing all night.
Yeah, she's also got that very, like publicist vibe, where she's, like, very industry.
Yes.
Yeah. What about both cops from Knives Out?
Ooh, that would be fun.
I'm really enjoying Rian Johnson tweeting about, I'm sorry that I don't know his name, but the non-Lakeith Stanfield cop. He's been in his tweets a lot recently.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I feel like the answer here is we need Howard Ratner to host the Oscars.
Yeah, he was robbed. I'm looking at my Little White Lies cover of him right now, and he was robbed.
Lovely.
Sandman. Also, I did a poor introduction of yourself, Anna. Speaking of Little White Lies, would you mind just kind of sharing where people can find you online if they want to read things?
Yes, sure. What a good segue. Yes, so I'm a film critic, or trying to be. You can find my work at Little White Lies, indeed, among other places such as Film School Reject, CinemaScope, The Globe and Mail, a bunch of others, I think, probably. Yeah, just around. You can mostly find me on Twitter yelling about stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I'm looking at your pinned tweet right now, and it's like basically just a synthesis of everything we've talked about. It's just like it's a link to some of your work at Film School Rejects. It's got a photo of Brad Pitt.
Yep, it's just me talking about like a 20-second scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for 2,000 words. It's what I do.
That's, I mean,
you know,
that's Twitter minus the character limit.
Yeah, I love my hyperfixations.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think. Was the first this is a pretty rough segue, but was the first thing you ever said to me in person was that I was wrong about something?
Oh God, I think it was.
I think I saw you walking I was walking either in or out of a screen, and you were walking the opposite direction, and you had like my letterbox pulled up with something I had just seen, and you said, "You rated this X. Why are you wrong?"
Oh yeah, that sounds right.
Oh, you know what it was? Do you want me to sell you out on Mike?
Sure.
I think it was because I had given Portrait of a Lady 5 stars.
Oh yes. Yeah, that's true. It's fine. It's not a 5-star movie.
I mean, listen, you and the Academy agree.
Me and France agree, because they didn't even submit it.
Yeah, that we don't have to get into that.
Yeah, I mean, look, I would have like been like, I wouldn't have objected to like getting a nomination. I just like don't think it's like the masterpiece that I sort of see people saying it is, or like I just had a totally different experience with it. But like, you know, I got nothing against it. Like, I mean, I like Siama. Like, I loved Girlhood. Like, mm-hmm. That was on my best of the decade list.
Yeah, I like Girlhood a lot.
It made my top 50. Like, I have nothing against her. I just, sometimes films don't work for you the way they work for other people.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was my first of the festival. And I was, like, truly trying to say to myself, like, are you just excited to be here? And then I thought a second time, mm-hmm. And I was like, still excited, baby.
That's fair.
I just want to be stranded on a rocky island.
I mean, the coast don't of we Brittany. All?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anything else at the Oscars we should get out of our systems? The movie we're about to talk about has 3 Oscar nominations as of today. So
it sure does.
We'll get into that, but anything else there? I mean, it really is. It's just so dull. Again, both popes. We nominated both popes.
Yep.
And they're sure fine. Did. And the popes are fine.
Yeah. I haven't seen the 2 popes. I, like, probably won't.
I mean, it's very available. That's a thing it has going for it.
That could be, like, the full quote. It's available. You can watch this.
Mm-hmm. One of the most easily acquirable films of the year.
Yeah.
Well, fuck. Let's talk a little bit about you, I guess, before we talk about the movie.
Okay.
I asked you to do this movie specifically for a couple of reasons. One, you are the biggest Fox News viewer that I know personally.
Yep, exactly.
2, you're blonde. So
okay.
I think you could contribute some real like insider scoop here. You're a bombshell.
Oh, well, thank you. I was actually going to say, like, as sort of a resident blonde, I do appreciate coming on this.
Yeah, I think, listen, in addition to your film critic expertise and just my personal trust, I thought those were primarily the reasons. But I don't actually know a lot about you and your history with Nicole, if there is any. Do you have any, like, favorite performances that jump out? Anything from a child?
Yes, of course I have a history with Nicole. I watch movies. So I would say, like, my sort of formative Nicole performance was probably To Die For. I remember seeing that as a kid and being like, ooh, yes, this is a movie that I like. Just because it was, like, you know, kind of, like, fun and exciting. And it was definitely that thing where I was watching it at 8 years old and I was like, this is not made for me, so I inherently like it. And then I remember, like, weirdly, I feel like maybe my second might have been, like, Stepford Wives, because I do remember seeing that relatively young. I don't really remember what I thought of it. I honestly do enjoy it now. Like, it's, you know, it's a fun time.
It's what it is.
Yeah.
And I can see Stepford Wives appealing to a youth. It's, like, very colorful and, it, like, it's very silly.
Yes. And, like, Glenn Close, love it. And then I'm trying to think of, like, what my other, like, big Nicole moments were. I think I feel like this is a very common answer because it's one of the greatest films of all time. But in high school, the first time I saw Eyes Wide Shut, and just what a movie, what a film, what a work of cinema. And she's so good in it and so spectacular, and just like such a riveting performance.
In a movie that like very much wants you to believe that Tom Cruise is the main focus, like it's a tremendous performance for sure.
Yeah, no, but it's like all about her. So yeah, that was definitely like, that's probably now my favorite Nicole Kidman movie. Favorite performance might be Birth.
Correct, thank you.
Yeah, which is a film that I only watched for the first time a couple years ago, but obviously was floored by it. And then I actually think that one of the other Nicole performances that I want to single out is Stoker, because I feel like when I saw that, I wasn't like super into her. Like I wasn't not a fan, but I guess at that point I just like hadn't really seen anything from her in a while that I was like, oh yes, like Nicole Kidman. And then I went into it and I was like, all right, like she's in this. I don't feel particularly strongly about her as a performer right now. And then coming out, Nicole fucking owned that. She's incredible. And then, yeah, she's good. I like her. She's blonde. She's tall. I'm a fan.
Yeah. I think that's a really good, like, comprehensive list. I saw some real Stoker trash talking on the timeline yesterday. And
no, incorrect.
It was incorrect. Yeah. I almost linked them, but then I was like, that's a little obnoxious. But yeah,
no.
Yeah, I love a Wentworth Miller screenplay. What can I say?
Fair, yeah.
Where's his podcast? I think I forced you to watch this. I think by when I had asked you, you hadn't seen it. Would you have seen this in a theater had I not said something?
Yeah, I mean, look, all three of the like main actresses are blonde and two of them are very tall and the third is Margot Robbie. So this is like absolutely a film I would have seen regardless, you know. It fulfills my very low bar of what I will go see. And I gotta be honest, spoiler alert, I liked it more than I thought I would.
Oh, same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's like the complete failure that a lot of people think that it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
Should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
I guess a good place to start is just the fact that this movie A focuses on real events, some of which are like very much still happening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm just gonna put this out there at the front that like I'm just gonna talk about the movie. I like don't have enough perspective on like Fox News or know enough about any of those people outside of like what this movie covers to have any sort of like authority on that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, why I brought you on here as the resident Fox News expert.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
I mean, like, as someone who, like, obviously lived through this happening because it happened, like, a few years ago, I was surprised at how much I was not aware of it going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of the big... Yes, I think, like, all of the big moments in the film, like, I do remember, obviously, like, stuff around the election and mm-hmm. her face-to-face with Donald Trump, but yeah. There were definitely some minor moments that I was like, oh, that happened in like 2015, and I've like either already completely forgotten or it was like brushed over by something larger, or I just like it never made it to my sphere. Mm-hmm. which, like, I think, you know, I'm probably not alone in saying that I'm probably more a politically engaged person in a post-2016 world. So maybe that accounts for some of that.
Yeah, same.
But I guess I'm just really glad that with a movie with a sensitive subject matter as this, they got the man who directed the Austin Powers films and Trumbo to tackle this. I guess when it all comes down, where the chips all fall, I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Jay Roach is synonymous with deft touch. So wise choice for a director to tackle this.
Yeah, wild choice. Also, talking about Austin Powers in 2020 just makes me think of that weird Austin Powers joke in the middle of Midsommar.
Yeah. And it also made me think of Roman Polanski's suit in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where he's wearing the Austin Powers suit.
Yeah. Also, like, that Austin Powers joke in Midsommar, the way that I feel about that, I think is the way that you feel about the, like, throwaway Baby Driver reference in Knives Out, which is, like, it shouldn't matter at all, but it, like, is this giant colossal thorn in your side.
It really is. Okay, that's fair. I accept that. Yeah, like, it shouldn't matter to me, but, like, I just, it just took me out of it. So, like, you know, it's a downside for me of the film, where I'm just like, oh, mainly because I just don't like to think about Baby Driver in the year of our Lord 2019 or in the year of our Lord 2019.
We don't have to get into it.
But like, yeah, that's a fair.
But when you told me about that and I saw the movie a second time, it happens so quickly and there's like loud screeching sound effects over it that like no one in that audience heard that joke. But you were just like, yeah, I just can't get past the dated Baby Driver joke. Like, this movie's so current.
Yeah, I like that you're just like, Annie, you need to let this go. And it's like, no.
I'm a hypocrite, though, because I think about that Austin Powers thing all the time. And I've heard him explain his justification for it. And I'm still like, nope, don't like it.
That's fair. I
Anyway, welcome to the Austin Powers cast. This is your host.
Okay, but for real, if you ever wanted to do an Austin Powers podcast, I would do that with you.
I would be down. I remember having a great affinity for those movies, as most people do. But I've watched, and maybe I've talked about this, I've watched the first one within the last 2 years with a friend, really thinking it would hold up. And, like, truly so much of it falls apart that, like, I felt bad.
Yeah. I will say, I think the first one might actually be my least favorite of the three.
Hot take, maybe.
Yeah, so as a kid, when I sort of, like, got into it, definitely my favorite was the second one, Spy Who Shagged Me. And I don't know, now maybe it's the Beyonce of it all, but I do actually really enjoy
Goldmember. I like Goldmember a lot. I remember it liking it a lot when it came out, and I imagine if I revisited, that one might.
Yeah. Like, these aren't, like, revolutionary films. I'm not like, oh, this is, like, a work of cinema, but, like, I laugh every time. So,
sure.
You know, that's all I. That's
What's
all
your
I
favorite Austin Powers joke? And then we can move on if you can remember one off the top of your head.
Oh, probably from Goldmember. The thing that gets me is just him peeling off his skin and he'll put it into skin box.
Yeah, the little like chest.
And then, of course, there's the Michael Caine line. Oh God, what is it? There's only two people I can't stand. There's only two types of people I can't stand. People who are intolerant of other people's cultures and the Dutch.
That's a good one. I always think about the long extended bit where he first wakes up in the first one and he's like asking where all his friends are. And he's like, Jimi Hendrix? And he's like, died, overdose. And he's like, Janis Joplin? He's like, died, overdose. He's like, Big Mama Cass? And he's like, died, ham sandwich.
God.
Which, okay, can I say one more thing about the Oscars, and that's that the woman that played Mama Cass in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood should host the Oscars as Mama Cass.
Yes! Oh, I would that love
is, like, that. A little absolutely. Cameo that is, like, so brief, and, like, she does almost nothing but lead Margot Robbie through the party and dance with her, but it's, like, where's her biopic?
Yeah. Agreed.
I've tweeted this a million times, but I think Alison Tolman should play Mama Cass, like, yesterday, and then I will happily collect my check from CAA.
Yep. yes.
Bombshell.
Bombshell.
Speaking of cameos, this movie, like, actually stunned me with the fact that everyone in this movie is a somebody.
Yes. every single white actor who has ever been in anything is in Bombshell.
It's crazy. And they come and like so wild. They come in like 80% through the movie and they have like one line. Like by the time that Richard Kind shows up is Rudy Giuliani.
Oh my god.
You're like it's like 75% of the way through the movie, and then Malcolm McDowell as
I died.
Oh my god, what's his name? The mogul. Rupert Murdoch. Yeah. A person that they're talking about through the entire movie, and you're just waiting to see like who plays him or if he's going to show up. And then it's fucking Malcolm McDowell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's even just like small things where I was like, oh my god, Ashley Green mm-hmm. is alive. Right. Yeah.
Ashley Green playing one of the women. Abby Huntsman, maybe? It's fine.
I wouldn't even begin to guess.
I will say that the woman that played one of the sidekicks in Legally Blonde plays Janine Pirro here, and that is the standout performance in this movie for me.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice that it was from Legally Blonde. Yeah, it's
Serena, I think. I could look it up, but it's fine. Yes, and her name, I believe, is Lalana Ubach. I'll edit that in post if it's not, but when Janine Pirro shows up, that truly was a moment where I was like, visually I know it's her, that's a character that I know like from my Twitter feed, and I'm not sure if the impersonation is correct necessarily, but I do know that I'm enjoying what I'm seeing.
Yes.
Do you want to try to explain the plot at a high level for anyone who hasn't seen it? So exasperated that.
I know. Well, one of my notes is that this entire movie is a montage. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, it just sort of like breezes through things like very quickly, where it's like very much that like Adam McKay jumpy editing thing where it's like, it's weird because it's not like a style that I really gravitate towards, but there was sort of a merit here where like I definitely wasn't bored during Bombshell. Like, it sort of keeps up this pace where I'm like, all right, like, I'm here.
Yeah, it speeds along.
But yes. Mm-hmm. But it chronicles the sort of, like, Fox News scandal of Gretchen Carlson and Megyn Kelly and other women sort of speaking out against, like, years of harassment and sexual abuse from Roger Ailes, played by, oh my god, why am I forgetting his
name? John Lithgow.
Oh my god. Played by John Lithgow in like 40 pounds.
Yeah, makeup. Should we get it out of the way? Is that a good performance or a bad performance?
I think it's fine. I don't really know like much about Roger Ailes, like what mm-hmm. he sounded like or how he acted. So I don't have a person to compare the performance to where I'm like, oh, like that's inaccurate. So I'm kind of just watching it for that. Mm-hmm. And like it's fine.
It trends like
he's sufficiently creepy. Yeah.
It trends like very close to Gary Oldman in Darkest Hour for me, which is like why I kind of bristle against it. But otherwise, I think it might be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like he's not going to win an Oscar for it, which is good.
Shockingly.
I don't particularly feel strongly either way. It's not like incredible. It's not bad or anything like that. I think like Lithgow is a perfectly serviceable actor who can do something like this. It's fine.
Yeah, he's innocent. I did listen to a DGA conversation with Jay Roach, and he talked about just like what a gentleman John Lithgow is and all the nice things he did, you know, for the various women on the cast, and apparently he just was very open to listening about how they wanted to film, especially like the, you know, the infamous like scenes where they have to kind of like hike up their skirts and do the mm-hmm. twirl. He like really took a backseat, as he should, you know, to how they wanted to film those, and that makes me nice. Sometimes I don't know, just that's sometimes nice. With older actors I'm like, oh.
Yeah, no, that's really nice. That's good to hear.
Yeah, we stan. You mentioned the format of the movie, which is, like, very fast-paced and very clippy. Mm-hmm. One of the first notes that I took is, like, when we're first introduced to Nicole's Gretchen Carlson, it's, like, via a flashback, which also has narration, and then also has Nicole giving a direct-to-camera address.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, how many levels of, like, dynamic storytelling do you need to get this one point across? And I guess the answer is three.
Yeah. Yeah, someone asked Jay Roach, how do you want to tell this story? And he said yes.
It gives me kind of, and again with Margot Robbie, gives me like kind of that same I, Tonya, like very snappy vibe. But I think it also suffers the same curse where like I, Tonya, like kind of has characters breaking the fourth wall and then has flashbacks and then does it. And then there's that insane part where like Alice and Janney like clomps on screen and is like, this story's not about me anymore. I don't like it. Remember that? Remember when we gave an Oscar
Oh
to
my God.
that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like her and I did like that movie, but yeah, not the performance that I would have voted for. Not with Laurie Metcalf in the category.
Also, you know what's crazy is Allison Janney's in this movie and it didn't even register until right
Yes.
now.
Yes. I like didn't notice the first couple scenes, and then I got to a point where I was like, is that Allison Janney?
Yeah, she's like very in this movie.
Yeah.
Also in
She
Ma.
sure is. There you go. You representation. It matters.
Allison Janney's post-Oscar career.
But she's tall, right? Like she's pretty tall.
Oh, she's infamously tall, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I support.
Yeah, I think she has. How much money do you think? This is such a diversion, but she's on that show Mom, and I feel like it's been on for so long, and I feel like she just must make crazy TV money.
Yeah. I mean, good for her.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where I'm like, does she care? Does she
Yeah.
care anymore?
Yeah.
Maybe she doesn't have to. Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know. What should we talk about? Do you want to talk about
God.
the scene that I saw on Twitter before I saw the movie, which is the scene in the bathroom with Kate McKinnon and Margot Robbie, which will be Margot Robbie's Oscar scene?
Oh, yeah, it definitely will.
Do you want to talk us through that? I have some notes. I just
Oh
think,
my God.
how
I
about
don't
the
even remember.
on-screen Fox News logo?
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh my God. Jesus Christ. This
Good
movie does the
choice or
most.
bad choice?
Choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God. Just the scene. It's weird. Just this moment of like Margot sort of explaining that she like comes from this family where Fox News is like the religion. And she's like, she doesn't want to be on TV. She wants to be on Fox News. And it's so much. I love just the thing of like, she's just going to explain her entire character and her motivation and her personality in like 10 seconds because screenwriting.
Yeah, it is interesting because everyone's a real person and that Margot character and I guess the Kate McKinnon character are composites. So
Yeah.
like J. Roach doesn't know what to do other than like because we know all these people other than just like have his new characters state their intentions to us.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like an amalgamation of like I guess just like a bunch of different characters, but I think they also just took a bunch of different or a bunch of different people, but they also took a bunch of different people and just put all of their personalities into one character. So it's just like, okay, like you are kind of inconsistent, but also whatever. I guess that okay, there are weird things where I know that certain readings of the film I could give it might be giving it too much credit, but it's also like if it's on the table, why not? Where I'm like, maybe the fact that she's a hugely inconsistent character is like showing the hypocrisy of someone who works at Fox News. And I'm like, maybe that's like the kind reading toward it, you know?
Yeah, I felt that way specifically about her like potentially flexible sexuality,
Yeah.
where I'm like, there's like maybe something really interesting to be said there about potentially, like closeting or closing off that portion of yourself. But then like the cynical part of me is like, is that just a way to like exploit Kate McKinnon's character? Who is, and her only plot point is that she is a closeted lesbian working at
Who
Fox
works at
News
Fox
and
News?
they like hit that punchline so many times.
Yeah. Just like every scene she's in, she's like, I'm a lesbian who works at Fox News. Margot, don't tell anyone I'm a lesbian who works at Fox News.
Even her last scene is like she finally gets up the courage to like take out a photo of her and her partner and like put it on her desk and then she
Puts it away.
puts it away.
Yep.
Just
Well,
like
Margot
great.
walks out, triumphantly leaving Fox News.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about this movie. I have a bunch of notes and I'm just looking at all of them. And I'm just like, like, are any of this interesting?
Yeah.
I think Charlize, good actress, TBH.
Yeah, I think she's very good. I think here she's, like, kind of doing the most, which isn't bad because it's probably what's been asked of her. But I actually think of the three, the best performance comes from Margot.
I agree. It's the most, I mean, maybe she's freed by not having to impersonate a character, but it's definitely the most, it's the most, period, but also, like, the most, real person. I don't know.
Yeah. I think she also, she has more, because she is sort of the, she has more scenes where she's, like, outright vulnerable because she is sort of the lowest on the totem pole, so she's, like, the easier target for Roger and those. So I think that she sort of has more emotional beats as a character just because she is more vulnerable. And we do sort of, you know, see her, like, really, you know, struggling with what she's being put through by this person. Whereas, like, I think the whole point is that, like, Megyn Kelly and Gretchen sort of have a degree of a certain amount of control over what is going on just because, like, they are the sort of on-screen talent where they have, like, people to work with them. And I think that, like, Margot's character Kayla is just, like, very alone other than Kate McKinnon, who's a lesbian who works at Fox News. And so she's just sort of, like, forced to pick up a lot of those, like, emotional beats. Yeah. So I don't know. I think she's pretty good. There's, like, a couple things. I know this is a Nicole Kidman podcast, but there are a couple notes that I took for Margot's performance that I really liked.
Please.
So there's the scene where she goes in for her meeting with Roger, where it's kind of like the most harrowing scene of the movie, and I think she plays it really well. Part where right when she walks in, she says hello in this sort of like sing-songy voice, like kind of like hello, like she sort of draws it out. And it's just like, it just reads to me as something that is so, it's something that you say when you almost want to be like a little bit extra performatively pleasant. And I totally buy that, for that's how, like, that character would walk into a meeting with anyone that's her superior, is she would just want to be very, like, sing-songy and sweet. And then she does something that she also did in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I think is also, like, a little bit of that, like, as the character being performative, where when she tells Roger that she was in, I think, college, she was, like, on the news doing weather, she sort of, like, rolls her eyes at weather. And she did the same thing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood when she explains that she plays the klutz in the movie, where it's just kind of like you get the impression that she's told a million and one people, like, I did the weather, you know, and she kind of, like, rolls her eyes at it. As this way of almost being like, I acknowledge that what I did wasn't the most important, but, like, you know, it's kind of like a jokey thing, but also she's going to mention it because she is kind of proud of it. So I think that's, like, an interesting, like, thing that she does that I think brings, like, a little bit. Yeah, those are my, like, two notes for Margot.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think she is, like, really good at finding very interesting, humane ways to deliver lines.
Yeah.
And I think she's also very funny.
Yes.
I, like, might have to secretly become a future Birds of Prey stan because I just keep watching that second trailer that just came out this week where it starts with her saying, like, I'm here to report a terrible crime. And she, like, rolls every single word. And it just, it cracks me up because, like, what is the motivation to deliver that line other than, you know, you're just playing, like, a deranged character, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think about the eye roll with I'm a klutz a lot. That whole, like, interaction with Kate Berlant is just so very sweet.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I mean, like, I know the BAFTAs got dragged for this, but, like, truly, I think, like, the double nomination wasn't undeserved.
Yeah, it's very tough.
Yeah, I don't know. I think she's wonderful in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. If she'd gotten nominated for that, I would have been pleased. But, you know, I'll take Bombshell. I think she's good in both. But yeah, I, like, not so secretly will probably end up seeing Birds of Prey, like, opening day. And I will be a fan of hers in it. And, like, I think it's fun that she's kind of leaning into the, like, cartoonish origins with, like, the character of Harley, because, like, she comes from the cartoon, right? So it's, like, very exaggerated, and I think, like, Margot really gets that. But yeah,
I do think it's very smart, a, because she is, like, to a certain degree, like, I don't know. I'm sure there's a level of contractual obligation there. So I think you got to make the most of it. But yeah. I do think you're right. Like, in a world, especially in the DC world, where yeah. they're so about, like, the grittiness of Joker, he's twisted. Like, mm-hmm. I think the right choice is to swing as far left as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just, like, have fun. Yeah. Like, she looks like she's having fun.
She does. I think that's the thing that I like most about it, is that just based on the trailer, it looks like she's really enjoying playing this character and being in this movie. And I hope she is.
I hope so, too.
Yeah.
She deserves what else we got here? She does. Should we talk about Nicole? Nicole's, like, not really in it this much, which is weird for me to say in, like, later period Nicole. I guess, like, yeah. Aquaman is kind of, like, an example.
Mm, yeah, I haven't seen that, but I believe it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where she shows up at the beginning and then she has, like, a triumphant return at the end. But, like, even yes. Goldfinch, where she's very supporting, she is, like, peppered in throughout, I think, because she really is, like, the star that they have mm-hmm. to flex in that movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting, and like in A Big Little Lies, and like a even in like The Upside, she's in that movie for so that fucking awful movie. She's in it for so much that like to watch a thing like Bombshell, I'm just like, oh, I forget like what a small role looks like for her.
Yeah, I was surprised that Charlize as Megyn Kelly was like truly the main character. Like, I think Nicole sort of, I don't know, not like fell by the wayside, but just like was definitely in more of a supporting role than I thought. Mm-hmm. And she's like, she's fine. Like, I don't think she's bad. But I don't know if she ever really has like the big moments that would sort of mm-hmm. make it like a truly like memorable performance. I also like, Gretchen Carlson. So I don't know how close she gets in terms of like the imitation of like her voice or mannerisms. But I believe that that's a person who acts that way. So, you know.
Yeah, I think she gets, like, the closest thing. I mean, she gets that one scene where she does an episode of her show without makeup, and it's based on a real episode, kind of it's the very Tyra Banks thing of, you know, showing that women can be beautiful without mm-hmm. wearing makeup, and Roger comes storming down to basically ask like what the hell's going on, and she kind of has like a confrontation. But even that is like compared to all the other confrontations that the Megyn Kelly and the Margot Robbie character have with him is like so tame, and we kind of know historically based on what the movie tells us about the two of them is that she's kind of on her way out anyway, and kind of like a second tier character. So the movie kind of sets that up, which I think is really interesting.
I also think that scene, she's definitely wearing makeup, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I mean, her face is
she has natural significantly freckles. Different.
Yeah, her face is significantly different than Gretchen Carlson. So I think there's like, that level of prosthetics. And I imagine that with that come a certain level of makeup just to even kind of blend those two. Yeah. But then I think beyond that, I think there's probably something. But I think it's a decent transformation. I mean, we mentioned it in passing, but this does have a hairstyling and makeup nomination, which, like, is it the top five of the year?
Sure.
I mean, there's certainly a lot of, I do think that, I mean, there are a lot of real women that some parts of the country know. And I think, like, they probably do a really good job of matching all of those. I'm not, like, super familiar with every member of the Fox News crew, but like even when they get down to like Jennifer Morrison, when they go to meet her, I'm like, okay, that's a real person. She probably has the same hair.
I'm like cool with that, like getting a makeup and hairstyling nom. I mean, I think like Charlize is like weirdly looks so much like Megyn Kelly.
It's pretty nuts. That is like the Virginia Woolf in The Hours of this movie.
Oh, her nose, and I think the voice, too. She definitely got real damn pat.
Yeah, I watched the clip of that came out either this week or last week with Megyn Kelly and the woman from the movie that they reference who tried to have the first suit against Roger, and they kind of tried to reunite with her, and her name is escaping me. Her name is, oh boy, Rudy Bakhtiar. Yes. So it's the real Rudy Bakhtiar and Megyn Kelly. And I was just trying to really listen with my eyes closed. And it's pretty damn good. Good mm-hmm. actress, TBH.
Yeah. Yeah, Charlize is good.
I also wanted to mention that I think that the other best supporting performance besides Margot Robbie is Megyn Kelly's wallet iPhone case.
Yes.
That is in every scene.
Oh my god. Yes. I love that. Like, how long does this movie take place over? It's gotta be at least like a year or two.
It's probably about a year because they talk about the election and the primaries are a huge point of focus. And there's also a portion where the current administration is in effect. So it's at least a year.
Yeah. Yeah, and she keeps that case.
Going strong. Yeah. Love it. I love that there's only one. What I think about is interesting about this movie, and I don't think it plays up enough, is that like every single piece of marketing is like the three of them. Mm-hmm. And they like actually only share one scene, and it's a scene that they like formally released before the movie even came out.
It is in the first teaser.
Which is in the elevator. Yeah, it's the first teaser. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And the iPhone case is very visible because she has crossed arms and she's holding it. But I don't know. I think that's actually a really interesting point that the movie has at its potential, which is that these women had this very similar mission, whether they knew it or not. And the overlap of the three of them was so fragmented. And I don't really think the movie does enough to show us that.
Yeah.
Other than just not putting them in scenes together.
Yeah. Again, it's like, there are readings that I can give the film that like would sort of, you know, pull out maybe the more interesting threads there, but I don't know if any of that is like intentional. I don't know if Jay Roach knows what the fuck is going on. You know, like there are kind readings to this movie where I'm like, okay, well maybe that's intentional, right? Or like maybe just like the fact that like I don't know where it really lands on what it's trying to say is an intentional thing where it's like, oh, like this is so murky that like there is no right answer. And like, you know, there is no true resolution here because this is still ongoing. Like, is that the case? Is that what the movie is trying to say? Or does it just not know how to resolve things?
Yeah, I think and just based on what I've heard Jay Roach say in interviews and things, I think you're right about like the murkiness, but even then I'm like, I think he thinks that murkiness is more significant than it is misleading or like maybe even borderlining on like an unsafe message to be projecting for a movie that's going to inevitably get Oscar nominations. But yeah, it's just, it's so weird to me. It's like, it has the potential to have this like hours like motif of like these women who are very, very slightly connected, but maybe don't have an awareness of it. Mm-hmm. And instead it's just like, oh, they're just not in scenes, but like, we won't tell this middle America audience why, even though they just like bought a ticket because they saw these three women on the poster.
Yeah. I do love the idea of so fascinating, like told through the hours, just like aesthetic and narrative structure.
Mm-hmm.
Like the bombshell that it's the hours.
Yeah, there would be like a scene. Well, Rudy Giuliani would be the Jeff Daniels character.
Oh my god! Can Donald we talk?
Trump, Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes would be Ed Harris. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh god. Richard Kind as Rudy Giuliani is. I laughed out loud the second he showed up on screen.
It's, and like I said, it's like the 130th cameo that's in the movie, and it comes so late, but it's a good one. I'm just like. Mm-hmm. Like, we haven't even talked about, if this was any other episode, we would have talked about the fact that there is a Duplass in this movie. Connie Britton's in this movie.
Yes.
Darcy Carden's in this movie. Amy Landecker's in this movie. Jennifer Morrison. Like, everyone. Stephen Root. Brooke Smith. Holland Taylor. Like, everyone is in this movie. Robin Weigert. A Big Little Lies reunion.
That's true.
I do love that Nicole Kidman can only do projects. Oh yeah, Nicole Kidman can only do projects where a very calm Robin Weigert consults her and like takes her through the process, and they have some sort of confidentiality.
That's how she's choosing.
I don't know, any other thoughts on the movie? I don't think, I mean, we should talk about if it's good or bad, because I think both of us kind of said lightly that we don't think it's awful.
Yeah,
I think I gave it 2 stars, or maybe 2.5. If I was feeling generous.
Yeah, I was generous. I think I gave it three and a half, something like that. Yeah, I think I also went in with like very lowered expectations because I saw a lot of people that hated it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm not going to like stump for this movie. It's not something that I'm going to defend against someone who does hate it. Like, I don't care enough to do that. But I do think that like, there is a degree to which I think that some of the criticisms are like, I don't know, maybe reading it a little bit unfairly. Like I do sort of see a lot of the validity of sort of saying like, okay, well, you know, we're looking at it from this perspective, but like, it's also a fact that like these women who worked at Fox News like benefited from sort of like purporting like very racist ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's never brought up or interrogated, and like it's very much sort of it like glosses over sort of who these women are in ways that I think are unsettling to a lot of people, and I totally understand that, and I definitely think that, you know, a better film would have managed to do both.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like understand the complexities of who they are and what they've done, and also still be sympathetic to what they've been through in this regard. But there is also like that part of me that, and maybe this is kind of simplistic, but there is that part of me that's like, well, you know, I don't think that a film about how like you can, you know, you can really dislike someone, you can really hate someone, you can hate things they've said and done, and like also just think the basic idea that they don't deserve to be like sexually harassed and sexually assaulted, and that they can go to work and feel safe. And like, I know it's so simplistic, but like, you know, it's true. And I don't, maybe this isn't like the best film to do something like this, but I don't think that that's an idea that doesn't have a place in the sort of ongoing discussion that we're having right now.
Yeah.
You know,
I think I agree. Yeah. I think, I really do wonder, and we've already said this a couple times, I really do wonder kind of like what's in Jay Roach's mind, because I think part of him probably like leaves some of that some stuff with just like the abject racism of Fox News. And mm-hmm. I think he touches on it in like cutesy little ways. And I wonder how mm-hmm. much he relies on just the audience already knowing that that's a thing. Versus yeah. like maybe kind of like having this maybe like lack of courage to tackle that while he's tackling yeah. something else. And that doesn't excuse either of those things by any means. I think it's really interesting because I think like this movie, I'm like impressed by how well it's been received by the people that it's about. Well, specifically Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson, whereas mm-hmm. like they by no means have fully like denounced the film. I mean, they've pointed out like minor things that were different.
Yeah.
But I wonder that if a movie that paints them in a harsher light, like, I don't know, I just wonder what the linkage between all of that is. And again, that's like not an excuse for not tackling any of those things, since I'm sure if you asked Jay Roach, he, you know, probably would say this is like a searing critique of all sides.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know, but I agree that I don't think that that completely invalidates this movie's right to exist or the mm-hmm. things that are perhaps decent about it.
Yeah, like, I think if we're gonna sort of, like, tell stories about, if we're gonna make films about, like, the kind of, you know, Me Too movement, if we're gonna use that term sort of, like, very broadly, of sort of, like, the things that have changed in the last sort of, like, 5 years or so, this is definitely like part of that conversation. And it, you know, I don't know, I think there's definitely a place to have a story like this and to talk about it. And this film isn't the best version of that, but I don't think it's the worst. Yeah.
I mean,
that's
this isn't
like where I land, where I'm like, you know, I can't really bring myself to like hate the film. I can't bring myself to love it. It just sort of like does what it does. And I'm like, all right, like this, you know, this has a yeah. place.
It's all really messy. I think, you know, I just recently rewatched Silence of the Lambs because Blank Check was going through mm-hmm. Jonathan Demme's films, and they had a really like interesting, insightful conversation about the Buffalo Bill character and like what that means yes. for the trans community and the LGBT yeah. community. And, you know, they came upon what I thought was a really salient point, was this idea of like, you know, like you can be X, Y, and Z and also bad. and also still be like a flawed and complex human character. And I think like at its best, maybe the movie approaches that in ways that are, you know, decently respectful. And I think, you know, I think there's also that kind of like showbiz element that's like very much the bread and butter of the Fox network that the movie tries to incorporate. And maybe those two things don't gel 100%, but
yeah,
it's done something if we're having like a, you know, potentially nuanced conversation about what is obviously a very complex subject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I will say that I like that it doesn't sort of take this position of kind of like, you know, what was happening behind closed doors was like counter to, you know, the Fox News system or what it stands for. I think the movie like lays it pretty bare that this kind of treatment of women is like baked into the organization. And even just like the final card where it's like, you know, the women were sort of paid out like a total of like 50 million for 20 plus women who came forward, and Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly were fired with like $65 million buyouts for like their contracts or whatever, where it's like, or their severance or whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, like this is still fucking bullshit. Like even if, you know, this is a resolution, quote unquote, it's still fucking bullshit, and they still got away with way too much and left with money, you know? So I do think it's like very critical of like not just the individuals but the system at Fox News and the system that allowed them to operate for so long. So yeah, I see that as a plus of the film.
I think about like the anecdote about them having to have clear desks because it like shows off women's legs.
Yeah.
Like that is one of those moments where I'm like, oh yeah, it is like systematically ingrained into this system. Like that is apparent to not only everyone that works in that organization, but also like any potential viewer at home, whether they acknowledge it or not. So yeah, I'm okay sitting with this film as where it's at. Maybe I've come around. I wasn't like a hater, but yeah, I don't know. There's a hot two plots in it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe we try to rate it. You want to try and assign some scores?
Sure, yeah.
While I'm pulling up the document, any final thoughts? Anything I've missed here? Or we've missed? For having only done this 5 times together, I think we've done pretty well.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of other, like, things. I think the scene between Megyn Kelly and Kayla towards the end is very interesting, where Kayla sort of tells her, like, you know, you're Megyn Kelly, like if you can't speak out, like who can? I think is interesting. I think it's like, I don't know, it's again, it's a difficult nebulous idea here of like, how much does someone sort of have a responsibility to, like, you know, speak out? Because there are going to be interns who don't have the security that comes with being Megyn Kelly. And it's maybe, like, not, you know, the correct thing for Kayla to say. Like, I do think that there is an element of Megyn Kelly as a victim, which is not at all fair. But I also, as much as it's not the 100% appropriate response, I do buy it as a response that someone would have in that situation. And, you know, maybe there's like, I don't know, a validity to kind of like airing all of those difficult ideas that aren't totally appropriate, but that are, you know, feelings that someone would experience in that situation.
Yeah, I that is really interesting. I think like in careful hands, there's something really fascinating about people doing or saying like the wrong things in these types of situations. Yeah. And I'm thinking about like, this isn't a great example, but I did just for the first time recently watch that movie Una with Rooney Mara, which is like based on Black Bird. And like that is, I think when that play is at its best or when that film is at its best is when those characters are handling, you know, what is really obviously like a long-term bit of like sexual predation in the wrong ways. Like I think when that's carefully done, it's so fascinating. And I think there are glimpses of that in this film, specifically when that scene that you mentioned, but I'm also thinking about Megyn Kelly interacting, and we haven't really talked about her with her like female assistant and with her male assistant, and kind of the way that those dialogue between the three of them happens. Because I actually think in most of the cases, the Rob Delaney character, the man in the room, is like the response that I think is like probably the most like appropriate. And the Megyn Kelly response is oftentimes like kind of cagey and distant. And I don't know, there's something interesting there. Maybe we've judged this movie too harshly.
Yeah, again, like, I think it's all, like, there are these interesting ideas there, and I think there's a version of it that could have been really, really good, and maybe, like, this version is just, like, decent, and that's okay. But I definitely do have an interest in sort of stories that can get at those, like, feelings that you have that you know aren't, like, correct for the situation, or they're not fair, but, like, they're there anyway. And actually, like, one of the things that I thought of was, sort of like, I mean, I never finished the show, but like the first couple of seasons of Transparent, where there are sort of moments where the kids will sort of like be talking to their, you know, mom who has transitioned. And it's like this sort of feeling of like, well, I miss my dad. And it's not correct. It's not like a good, fair response, but it is like what someone is feeling in that moment. And I don't know, I think there's, it's difficult, and there's no real easy way to discuss all of it, but I think that like there are definitely times when like you'll have feelings about a situation where you're like, I know this is not like the good, correct, quote-unquote woke response, but like I feel it anyway. And I think that there's like a lot of interesting potential in like digging through the mess of that situation, of those feelings, and that's not done necessarily 100%, you know, ideally here, but like I don't know, maybe there's something about the effort of it that I want to give credit for.
I think that a lot about, and I think we've come so far in terms of the way that we see like queer narratives, and I think we've grown slightly away from this idea that like every queer narrative much match like my experiences or the person that's watching it. And I'm like very excited that we can see that sometimes those are messy. And I do think there's an element here. It just like, and I know you said this too, it's just like the fact that it's coming from like Jay Roach.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, ugh. But then I just have to remember it's like Nicole's production company. And, you know, I think Charlize, I'm going to guess, but I'm certain she has at least a producer credit, if not, you know, an EP credit on here. So, you know, I think there's probably something there, but not bad movie.
I would love to see a version of this directed by a woman.
I was going to ask you before we started this if there was a particular director that you had in mind. And I was trying to think.
Let me think. I feel like I could probably,
I can give you my gut response, but it feels so obvious.
Okay, who?
My gut response is Andrea Arnold.
Oh, interesting.
But I feel like that's obvious given work history with Nicole, and maybe even like subject matter. But I'm trying to think. Maybe like a Lynn Ramsey.
Yeah. Maybe even like after Hustlers, I think Thoraine Scafaria.
That's a good one.
Interesting take on that.
God, what a director.
Yeah. I don't know. Probably someone else who I'm like forgetting right now.
I know, even like a Marielle Heller, the way that she deals with trauma and the way that she gives voice to people that have such complex feelings and really conflicting feelings.
Yeah.
All right, if anyone woman wants to reboot Bombshell in 20 years.
I'm here for it.
I've got the document pulled up, the document. Do you want to try and rate this movie?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so this is going to be for, I don't even know what this is for now, because it was for the Golden Compass Award, but I gave that thing away, so now I have to come up with a new award. But these are going to be 1 through 5 categories, 5 being the highest on various elements of the film. Again, they can be about Nicole or the entire movie. It's up to you. But the first one, and this is a big one for this film, is going to be the wigs in Bombshell.
I would say a 4.
Okay.
I think it's necessarily pretty high because it's a very wiggy movie. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't like, they're not necessarily wigs where I'm like, oh, like that's a wig, but I'm not like, oh, that's a wig that I really, really love, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're good. They're
yeah, they're true to life.
They're very present. I buy them for all of the characters. I think like, yep, that's what those women look like. But
yeah. Great. Four.
Maybe not quite a five, but four.
How do you feel about the accents in the film?
Oh boy. Oh, there sure are many.
there are.
Yeah. Again, I would probably say four, like just because like, you know, I'm a critic. I can't give everything a five, but like there are so many accents. Everyone's doing an accent. And often like not just sort of characters doing or actors doing accents that aren't their natural accents, but doing like an accent that is of a very specific person.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said, you know, Charlize, great actress. Nicole, I think like I buy it, you know. I'm trying to think if there was like a moment where I was like, oh, you're Australian. And I don't think there was.
No, I didn't think that either. I didn't quite have the moment because like you, I'm not like 100% like locked into what Gretchen Carlson sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, oh, this sounds like the consistent voice of a person that I believe to be real. I'll buy that.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's Malcolm McDowell doing an Australian accent. It's playing Rupert Murdoch. Yes. What do you think about the Naomi Watts scale? So on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being like Naomi Watts was supposed to play Gretchen Carlson, to like Naomi purposely missed this in theaters and didn't vote for it in any of the categories. How do you think she falls on this scale?
I think I'm going to hit a 4 again. I think, I don't know if Naomi would have played this, but like, I think she absolutely showed up for it.
There are a lot of blondes in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I'm surprised Naomi Watts wasn't in this movie. Not necessarily like playing, you know, Gretchen or anything like that. Like I wouldn't have seen her as one of the leads, but I could have seen her somewhere in this.
Wait, I am just realizing something, which is I think she might be, hold on.
Is she in this movie?
Wait, no, this is, I can't believe that we didn't do this research before. I just had like a shot to the heart, but she's in the Roger Ailes Showtime show playing the Nicole Kidman role. So this is like a 37 on the Naomi Watts scale.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. 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 This is 100.
This is unprecedented.
Wow.
I just had a flashback to my coworker asking me if I watched the TV show when I told him I was recording Bombshell. And then I just like have this image of the one poster photo, which is like Russell Crowe leaning over Naomi Watts, but she's playing the Gretchen Carlson role.
Oh my God.
And
wow.
Just so you know, so Naomi Watts is the Nicole Kidman impersonator. Sienna Miller is the Naomi Watts impersonator, and she's playing the Mrs. Roger Ailes part.
Oh, wow.
So this is about as interconnected as it gets.
I cannot recognize Sienna Miller, so that will be lost on me.
Wow. That's a 1500 on the scale.
Naomi, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I could have seen her in this movie, but I also, like, am not super surprised that she's playing that character.
Yeah. she has conflicted really well. What do you think, okay, where do you think this falls on the Scientology scale? And I always have to remind myself of this, but a 5, oh God, I love this scale for myself that I truly can't remember. Let's look at another movie. So we gave Days of Thunder a 5, which must mean that it's Scientology propaganda.
Well, Tom Cruise is in it, so yeah. Automatically.
Yeah, I love this scale for myself. Oh, now I'm
like,
questioning
so 5
myself.
Is like, 5 is like, it's like a Scientology propaganda movie. 1 is like, it is anti-Scientology.
Yeah, okay, wait, no, I had this all wrong. God, this is the worst. I need to quit this show. I don't even know my own scale. A 5 is anti-Scientology. That means it flies in the face of their conventions. And a 1 is like, they're going to show it to you when you go for your free personality test. It's been a while.
I might hit this smack dab as like a 3. Because I don't think it's really like it has like conventional aspects, but it is also about like women taking down a powerful organization, mm-hmm. which like, where is Shelley Miscavige? And like, you know, Godspeed to Leah Remini. She is fighting the good fight. I respect it. I would love to see like her sort of like take them down. So there is that kind of like, you know, there's a system at play here and we are going to tackle it. Spirit of the film that I think like Scientology wouldn't want because it wants to keep everyone in line. But I also don't know if it really like has like a, I don't know, an anti-Scientology like spirit to it inherently.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track with the...
Yeah.
I mean, Scientology, I think, has probably some skeletons in their closet that they wouldn't aired. And I think that this movie aims to exercise some of those. So, yeah. I'll buy that.
Should we consider that, like, just of this cast, there must be a Scientologist in it? There must be.
I mean, statistically, they're... I mean, in any given movie, I assume someone in the cast is. If you had to place your bets on one of the actors, if you had to out someone as a Scientologist from this cast.
Is Alice Eve a Scientologist?
What do we know about her?
I don't think so.
I still can't get over this IMDb page for finding out that Naomi Watts is in that show.
That's so funny.
That's a 600. What is... I mean, Alice Eve's Wikipedia page is... I don't know. What's this? I feel like there's not a huge Scientologist population in Britain.
Yeah.
I feel bad outing anyone as a Scientologist.
No, I don't know. I don't know if any of these people.
You know who's not a Scientologist? Richard Kind.
Yes, he's too kind.
While we're thinking about that. Something else to think about is where do you think this falls in overall level of iconicness for Nicole's career? This might also be like, if you ask my mom about this movie, does she even know Nicole Kidman's in it? Will it make her IMDb top four? That sort of thing.
See, this is a difficult question because I think this is definitely a movie that moms will like.
Yeah.
This is a mom movie. This is a movie that like in 6 months, my mother is going to tell me that she watched The Bombshell on Netflix and she thinks it's really good.
It's also really interesting because she's really not in it, but like the marketing would convince you otherwise. Yeah. So I can see my mom not watching this movie and being like, oh, Nicole Kidman was in The Bombshell.
Yeah. But I also just like, I don't like, not that Nicole is like bad in it by any means, but I just don't think like she ever really has that. She doesn't really have that many moments to be memorable.
Mm-mm.
So I think I will definitely get to a point where I like won't totally remember that she was in this. So maybe for that reason, I would give it a 2.
Yeah, I think it's a 2. I think it's her performance. I don't think her performance is a 1. I think her performance in the scope of what the movie's trying to accomplish is pretty low. I think maybe she gets some bonus points because of the branding. But yeah, I think this is like in 5 years, if you have to like name the things that Nicole Kidman was in those preceding 5 years, like we will very likely miss this.
Yeah.
All right. I think you did shockingly well. Let's see. Yeah, so overall, this has a 22 out of 30, which is a pretty respectable score. I do think over 20 is pretty great. Some other 22s, if you were curious.
Yes.
The Others.
Okay, yeah.
The Beguiled. A little movie I call Paddington.
Wonderful film.
And, wonderful band. Yeah, and an equally wonderful film, Dogville.
Ooh.
Both lighthearted fare.
Oh, I think Dogville should be like a 30.
Dogville is like a 35, and those were just some mistakes in adding.
Okay.
It's the only movie to get higher than the highest possible score.
Okay, good.
Wow, we did it.
Yeah.
It took us 6 hours.
We bombshelled.
The bomb has burst. Before we go, can you remind people where they can find you? I guess you're writing and also where you're yelling about Brad Pitt, which is sometimes the one in the same place.
Yes, you can find me more often than not on Twitter at Anna Swanson, but like the vowels removed in Swanson. So SWNSN. Just type in Anna Swanson and I'll probably show up. Most often I am, when I'm writing, I'm at filmschoolrejects.com, and also places like Little White Lies recently, CinemaScope, The Globe and Mail in Toronto. Yeah, probably some other stuff at some point.
It's a good list.
Yeah.
Little White Lies.
Not too shabby.
Amazing. Congratulations, by the way. I know I just said that earlier in the week, but I guess, as always, you can follow the podcast on Twitter. That's at The Kid Manifesto. Follow it if for no other reason than these episodes only come out when Nicole has new features, and then even then only when I can muster up the courage to see the movie and record and find a guest willing to do it with me.
What's Nicole's next?
Oh, and I'm so glad you asked. I really don't know. I know, let's see. Let's check the old IMDb's. Mm-hmm. She's got a lot of fish in the fryer, you know.
My insider
sources tell me that she's really only excited about the things that she's working on through her production company. Let's see. There was that news since we last recorded, that kind of like tweet that became news with like her and Lulu Wang, where they were like, we can't talk about what we're doing, but we're being photographed together. And then they were like, oh, we're producing something.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing The Undoing, which is that Suzanne Beer, David E. Kelly thing. Which I think is like a mini season. She's doing that Nine Perfect Strangers adaptation. Those are the only two things I can think of while this is loading. Yeah. There's also like, there's been a thing in her in production for like years, which is an adaptation of that play that she did in London, Photograph 51. And I just like want that to get made.
Ooh.
But it's been on there for so long that I'm just like, oh, that's just like the Wicked movie. You know, that's just like, that's just like that thing that sits there. It's like the Avatar sequels.
Yeah. Look, don't let your dreams be dreams.
I know. If we can return to Pandora, then we can get a Photograph 51 adaptation.
Yep. So I haven't seen Photographs 1 through 50. Will that be a problem if I want to see this movie?
Bye. What if I just hit end right now? I'll send you my screener link. Just don't share it with anyone.
Okay.
For the first 50 photographs. I don't know. Follow me on Twitter. It's at Mr. Sam Herbst. I promise not to tweet about Mon 2020, but I already broke that. So... I don't even know why I'm still here. I don't know. This has been really lovely. Anna, thank you.
Anytime.
I guess tune in 6 months when we have another Nicole film. It will be in a post-Oscar world, probably. I don't know. Nicole's nominated for a SAG award for this movie, we should have said. So I guess tune in for our special emergency episode with Anna and I if she wins. We'll be reporting live from the SAG Awards. Yeah, why not? That's a good place to end this. Thank you so much. I don't know. Bye.
Bye.